This podcast discusses exchange-traded options issued by the Options Clearing Corporation. Options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. Individuals should not enter into options transactions until they have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics, and risks of standardized options. Available by calling 1-888-OPTIONS or by visiting optionseducation.org. None of the information in this presentation should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice.
Good news for investors. This week is the market closed at a 17-week high.
This is OIC's Advanced Options for Experienced Investors podcast, a review of options basics.
Tonight's presentation is the advanced seminar. My name's Dan Passarelli. Options are not for everyone. I'm not a registered financial advisor. I don't give advice. And I don't talk about things like taxes and margin requirements and other transaction costs. All right, really quickly, options are contracts. If you buy an option, you own an option, you have the right to do something at some point in the future, either buy or sell an asset, which in this case, for our purposes, is 100 shares of the underlying stock. If you sell an option, well, you've incurred an obligation. You have the obligation to either buy or sell an asset if you become assigned. There are four basic types of option positions. You can buy or sell, calls or puts. If you buy a call option, you've bought the right to buy the underlying stock. If you buy a put option, you bought the right to sell the underlying stock. Now, if you short an option, then you've incurred an obligation, right? If you've sold a call, you've incurred the obligation to sell the stock if you get assigned. And if you sell a put, you've incurred the obligation to buy the stock if you get assigned. All right, let's run through a quick example of a basic options contract. First thing we have here is XYZ June 60 calls at $4. XYZ is the underlying, okay? We're talking about XYZ stocks, XYZ stock, typically 100 shares of XYZ stock, right? But every once in a while, it's not 100 shares, is it? Every once in a while, it might be something other than 100 shares. Now, when does this happen? Anybody give me an example? Stock splits, right. If a stock splits 2-for-1, which is a pretty typical stock split, right? Then that's not the case. You just end up with two options, and the strike price is half of what it used to be, right? If there's a 3-for-2 stock split, well, then it can end up being something else. If it's something weird like a 7-for-5 stock split, you end up with, you know, something other than 100 shares. So a big red flag that you might look out for is if you're looking at an option chain and, you know, you see the XYZ June 60 calls and June 65 calls, June 70 calls, and then you look and you see a whole nother month of June options with different strike prices, and they have a little bit of a different symbol, maybe they're XYY, well, that's kind of a red flag. You call 888 Options, and you ask them what's going on with it. It's probably a stock split or something. Okay, next thing is the expiration month. Here we're talking about June options. When do June options expire? Saturday following the third Friday of June, right? When you trade a typical equity option, you always trade 4 to 6 months. It's always 4, but every once in a while they list leaps on it, which will give you an additional 2 months. Next, we're talking about the 60 strike. The strike is what? Right, it's the price of the stock at which you'll either buy it or sell it if you exercise or get assigned, right? Call or put, we know what that is. Final thing is the premium. Here it's $4. If we buy one of these calls, we actually pay what? $400, right? The option premiums trade in nickels. Not like stocks where they trade in pennies, right? If the option price is trading above $3, well, then they're going to trade in dimes. Okay, options are either in the money, at the money, or out of the money. An in-the-money option is an option that has intrinsic value. Intrinsic value means if you exercise an option, you can turn around and sell that stock in the open market for a profit. If we're talking about a call, here we were talking about the 20 calls with XYZ stock at 25. The stock is trading above the call strike. That's an in-the-money call. With puts, if the stock is trading below the strike price, that's in the money, right? If we exercise the 30 puts here, With the stock trading at 25, this option has an intrinsic value of $5. At the money, really simple, the stock's trading right at the strike price. Out of the money, with calls, that means that the stock is trading below the strike price. With puts, it means the stock is trading above the strike price. Options are derivatives. Their prices are derived from the underlying stock price, right? So options are all about risk. They're all about risk transfer. When people trade options, they're doing one of two things. They're either using the options to reduce risk in their portfolio, reduce risk on one of the stocks they own, or they're using options to accept a little more risk to get the prospect of higher profits. LEAPS are options that have a longer term to expiration than a typical option. All LEAPS expire in January. That's one way that you know it's a LEAP. Another way is it's going to have a little bit of a different symbol. If we're talking about XYZ stock, well, all the options on XYZ stock are going to start out with XYZ. The LEAPS aren't. The LEAPS are going to start out with something else like XYY or something. They're going to have a little bit of a different symbol. Also, LEAPS are not available on all stocks. There's about 2,500 different stocks that have options listed on them. It's only about 500 or 600 that have LEAPS listed. Okay, I want to go over a couple of really common myths and misconceptions that I hear whenever I do a presentation kind of like this. How many of you have heard that 90% of options expire worthless? Yep. Every single time I do a seminar, at least one person says that they heard that. When it's a room this big, it's always a handful. I don't know whoever said that, but it's not true. The Options Industry Council keeps a record of these things. They do statistics. I mean, they're in the options business, right? 30% of all options, roughly, expire worthless. 10% of options are exercised or assigned, and 60% are traded out of, which means if you own them, you sell them to close the position. If you short them, you buy them back to close the position. All right, sellers are smarter than buyers. Anybody ever heard that one? There are a lot of people who think this. Some people think buyers are smarter than sellers, but the market wouldn't work if either the sellers or the buyers were smarter, would it? Because if the sellers really were smarter and people knew this, well, everybody'd be a seller, right? And what would happen if everybody sold options? That's right. It'd smash the prices, right? Then the smart people would be the buyers. So that one's not going to work either. How about options are a zero-sum game between buyers and sellers? Yeah, okay, right. You know what a zero-sum game is? It's when if one person wins by a certain amount, the other person must lose by the same amount. Now, aren't options a zero-sum game? I mean, if you buy a call and the call ends up being worth $5 at expiration, well, somebody sold you that call, didn't they? If you made the $5, didn't they lose the $5? Not necessarily. I mean, they could have closed it out, right? Not only could they have closed it out, but you don't know what they did with it. That could have been part of a buy rate package for them. That could have been part of a spread. They could have just sold it naked initially and then turned it into a spread. So you don't really know what other people are doing. So it's really not a zero-sum game. Investors can compete with professionals. On the other side of most of your trades are professionals. It's usually who? It's usually a market maker, right? Market makers are in a totally different business than you guys are in. The idea is that you guys are trying to buy an option here. You know, you buy 5 or 10 contracts at 2, and you're hoping to sell them at, 3 or 4, right? A few weeks from now. That's not what market makers are doing. Market makers are buying those same options at 2, and they're hoping to sell them at 205. Instead of buying 5 or 10 contracts, well, they're buying 100 or 50 or 200 or whatever. They're just trying to make nickels here and there. The professionals are out to get you. Okay, that one's true. No. All right. Now, if I were here to tell you, exactly what the ideal way to trade is, I wouldn't. I would just do it myself, right? There is no holy grail. There's no one who knows exactly the perfect way to make money. If they did, they wouldn't tell you and they wouldn't tell me. Why would they? But there are some generally good ideas. There are some concepts that all traders and all investors can use to help become better traders and to kind of help make better decisions for themselves. And ideally, being a profitable business person. The first thing is having an entry and an exit point. Now, a lot of this has to do with planning. All right? Before you put on any trade, you need to plan it. And what a lot of people do when they first start out, and even people who've been trading for a really long time, is they'll keep a journal. They'll, you know, if they're looking at a stock and they think, okay, well, this is what I think about this stock. You know, I think over the next 3 months it's going to increase by 25%. Well, they'll write down today's date, and they'll write down this is what my forecast is, and they'll also write down why. And if they think the stock is a buy, well, is the stock a buy here, right here at this price? Or is it a buy if there's a dip? Is it a buy $5 lower? So you have to come up with a specific entry point. And this is also the time where you come up with a specific exit point. If I think the stock is going to increase by 25% in 3 months, well, 3 months from now, if it's up by 25%, I ought to close my position, right? But what if 2 weeks from now, some adverse news comes out and the stock drops by 10%? What am I going to do? Worry about it then? You have to put a mental stop loss in, if not literally enter a stop loss order with your broker. So you have to come up with your entry and exit point prior to pulling the trigger on the trade. It's also not bad to have a pretty good idea of the risk-reward profile of the trade. You know, once you decide, okay, this is what my forecast is, well, you have to decide, well, what strategy am I going to use to try and capture, you know, the movement that I think is going to happen? Different option trades will offer you different risk-reward profiles. It's your job to try and select the best one that meets your forecast, the best one for your risk tolerance, and, you know, the best one for the situation. You have to understand what happens if the stock goes up. I mean, if you buy a call and the stock goes up, what happens to the call? I heard it goes up. You know what? Sometimes it doesn't. Depends on volatility. Depends on how long it takes to go up. If it's a longer dated option, if the interest rate changes, that could affect the price of the option. So you really have to start thinking about all these factors that are at play. Also, the bullet point second to the bottom here, approval for complex strategies. Now, some of you may be starting out, and you're thinking, you know what? I'm not going to get too crazy. I'm going to start with the easy stuff. I'm going to buy calls. I'm going to buy puts. I might do a covered call. But as you start progressing, you know, when you're putting on these trades, you have other options besides letting the option expire, besides exercising it, and besides simply closing the position. You can do what we call spreading out of the position. You can do what we call rolling out of the position. And in order to have approval for these complex strategies, you got to talk to your broker and you got to ask him for it. You have to have this approval in advance. Options are a little bit more complex than stocks, right? You got to take into account a lot of different factors of your forecast. There are many different strategies that you can use to capitalize on the same forecast. You do also have to have not just approval to do complex spreads, but when you're putting on trades, you can get a lot of leverage with options, right? You don't necessarily have to use all your margin money. It's always a good idea, especially if you're doing certain types of strategies like income spreads that we're going to talk about later. It's not necessarily a bad idea to have a little wiggle room, a little free cash, so that you have some extra margin to use if you want to adjust your position. No option strategy works 100% of the time, and nobody ever went broke taking a profit. These are words to live by.
Good news for investors. This week is the market closed at a 17-week high.
Ready to learn about options pricing? Then please download OIC's Options for Experienced Investors podcast, Options Pricing and Price Behavior. Remember, if you don't understand something in any OIC podcast or have an options-related question, Just call 1-888-OPTIONS or visit www.optionseducation.org.